This product is not yet rated.
We begin the BioShock 2 podcast series by talking with two key figures shaping the future of the game: Jordan Thomas, creative director at 2K Marin, and Hogarth de la Plante, lead environment artist. Both veterans to the BioShock franchise, they worked on the first game in Boston and moved to California in 2008 to start the new studio and begin work on the much-anticipated sequel. To start, I asked them to give me a rundown of their job descriptions, and their answers gave me much more than simple insight into what they do.
I'm the project's creative director. That kind of means executive hand waver. I ask for stuff and whine when it isn't quite right.
I'm the lead environment artist on BioShock 2. Basically, that means that I'm in charge of kind of architecture and lighting and making sure that the levels of the game get built out and look awesome.
Jordan also told me a bit more about the team building BioShock, one that spans, literally, the entire globe. The group consists of both people who have been with the franchise since BioShock 1 was still being built, to those who probably waited in line on opening day to buy the game, and now are getting a chance to work on it.
There was an original group of us that came over from 2K Boston, and all of those folks worked on the original game. And BioShock 2 is also being worked on by 2K Australia, and many of those guys were critical to BioShock 1, and they have returned for the second game. And then since then, we have been hiring a bunch of talented folks out of the Bay Area, some of whom are ex-film folks, like especially in the concept arena, and some of them are veterans of the many talented studios that are out here. The team is, frankly, we're very proud of them, and we've had to build 2K Marin more or less from scratch. Hoagie and I were part of that original group, and the team is led by Alyssa Finley, who is the project lead of BioShock 1 and who essentially seeded this new studio.
BioShock came on the scene in August of 2007 and won a slew of awards and praise from the press and gamers worldwide. The story, setting, and mystery of BioShock were profound and fresh, and when a sequel was announced, many agreed that 2K Marin would have some big shoes to fill when creating the next game of the series. As the mind creating the next chapter of Rapture's history, I asked Jordan to tell me what BioShock 2 was all about.
First and foremost, BioShock 2 is an attempt to bring new mystery to Rapture. So the story begins in the late 60s, the player takes on the role of the very first Big Daddy. So Big Daddies are these kind of lumbering, powerful guardian characters that were present in the world of Rapture. And this time you take on the role of the first one, this kind of prototype who has been sort of cut loose and given free will and is able to make use of plasmids. And plasmids are these sort of genetic superpowers that allow the player character to evolve and grow over the course of the game. And so the game sort of begins with a mystery, like who am I and how did I get here? And from there, you start build relationships with the characters that are surrounding that are still alive in Rapture. And by working with them, you can discover not only what happened to you, but you sort of work toward an escape. But if you have played it, then yeah, you get to sort of experience new locations and new sort of narrative that's embedded in this sort of sprawling failed utopia at the bottom of the sea.
Hogarth, called Hoagie by everyone in the studio, also had his own take on what BioShock 2 is about and how he is trying to reach both the gamer who has traversed Rapture many a time and the player who has never heard the word BioShock before.
For players familiar with BioShock, a reintroduction to the environment of Rapture, which is the city that Andrew Ryan created under the Atlantic Ocean. So it's a reintroduction for them, and we're trying to figure out how to bring new narrative elements to the location of Rapture to make it an interesting place to play through another BioShock title. For people who haven't played the game yet, they will get to learn about Rapture and who built it and why it's there and the events that have transpired in its, 30 some odd year history. The first game we saw part of Rapture, and now we're seeing parts that we haven't seen before yet.
One of the questions I heard most frequently among gamers after the announcement of BioShock was, why a sequel? Wasn't BioShock enough? And in part, that question made sense to me. BioShock was a game with a beginning, a middle, and end. No cliffhanger needed for something else. It seemed that Jordan, Hoagie, and all of 2K Marin had asked the same questions, or quite likely, read the same gamer comments, when approaching the story of BioShock 2.
Sequels are all about expectation, and BioShock is a series that we believe everybody thinks of as a very different animal from the next guy. And so the process began with where do you go with this? How do you bring people back to an experience and terrify them and shock them in a way that they're not expecting, but also fulfill the many expectations that they're projecting onto it?
Yeah, I think you know, the way I've put it in various press demos is that we sort of have the framework of Rapture in place, and we have some of the ideology that Rapture was constructed with, you know, that Andrew Ryan constructed it with. And then we have this sort of new framework of the new narrative that gets layered on top of that actual architecture, you know, not literally the same locations, but the idea of the city. And we're just trying to shift players' perspective in a bunch of ways to kind of keep that content fresh, but have it take place in the familiar and beloved environment of Rapture under the water.
Writing and building a video game can be likened to a novel, a comic, or a film. Like those other mediums, when creating a game, the developers have to think about more than just the gameplay, but about the story, the world, the ideas they want to convey, and the style in which they want to express them. For many, video games go further than any book or film can in allowing a person to step into another world and imagine themselves in a place entirely other than the one they live in. For Jordan and Hoagie, they had some important stuff they wanted to continue from BioShock 1, as well as new areas they hadn't explored before.
Just the idea that we knew that it was going to be awesome to come back to Rapture, but how do we, you know, make sure that that is going to be really awesome for an audience who's already been there? So that was sort of me, anyway, me working on the environment, and that's been my primary challenge. And I think we're doing a great job of you know, making it fresh and mysterious and awesome again. I think there are some thematic hallmarks of the BioShock title that, you know, it's interesting working with a different creative director this time around. It's interesting to see what Jordan pulls out of the world of BioShock that he sort of fixates on as the interesting things, as opposed to Ken when we worked on it the last time around. And so there still is the kind of the sort of background and backdrop of the objectivist utopia that was what Ken thought was so fascinating about that world. But now we've got that in the background, and now Jordan's sort of adding on top of that the things that he thinks are interesting about the characters in the world and you know, and what Adam does to them and you know, the power struggles that happen down there. So I think, you know, I think it's just really interesting anyway for me working on it to build on it that way.
For me, you know, on the one hand, the new mystery comment that we've now managed to plug a few times around is something that I feel like extends into the philosophy of Rapture, and that coming back to BioShock means that you need to be introduced to new ideas. And so Hoagie was talking about some of the things I'm interested, you know, the nerdy stuff that I dig about Rapture. But I also feel that while we can't go in deep because it would spoil the plot, I also feel that it's important that if you come to BioShock 2, that you get exposed to schools of thought that we didn't touch on in BioShock 1 and that are interesting contrasts to objectivism. And so some of our characters will be ideologues like Andrew Ryan was for BioShock 1. But have a very different point of view, and then on the gameplay front, I did feel like in BioShock 1 we managed to bring some very interesting choices to the first person shooter, and my feeling this time around is that we need to increase that expressivity when you decide to be the fire guy or the electricity guy that over the course of the game, rather than just like zapping a little harder or lasting a little longer or really just keeping up with the Joneses of the splicers that you're meeting along the way, your tactics are changing. You're gaining new usages and learning to, you know, pull off the bank shot and the sort of you know, Rube Goldbergian kind of trick shots that people really tend to dig. And furthermore, that your big daddy weapons, you know, that you're kind of evolving those throughout the game. So by the end, you've really rolled your own shooter. By the end, you're playing an entity that did not exist at first and that is wholly yours.
One thing seemed clear to me from talking with the guys. Rapture made Bioshock. That statement seems simple enough. But for a game in the shooter genre, having a city so rich and alive it can tell its own story past the plot of a single game is something unique. Many Bioshock fans have taken the world of Rapture and created their own fan fiction. In fact, ever since the game was announced and Bioshock 2 was only a title, the internet was alive with speculation about what the plot would be. A lot of it was very in-depth. Having a history with the first Bioshock, both Jordan and Hoagie knew how valuable an asset they had in Rapture.
We believe that it's incredibly fertile. Hoagie and I were both on Bioshock 1. In fact, Hoagie was my level architect or level artist on the Fort Frolic level. And when we were working on that game, there were a lot of ideas that occurred to us that we could do, but that we didn't fit into the first game. And toward the end, when Bioshock 1 was about to ship, these conversations would just emerge about what we could do next. And we think that a city built out of such strong ideas is a place that has long-term kind of interest. And so from there, it seemed like the shift of perspective that Hoagie mentioned, that moving into the role of one of these sort of noble but rather persecuted Big Daddy figures was an interesting way to change your role in the ecology and thus change the type of story that we're telling around you. And of course, you know, there are a lot of cool things that we thought that the player might like to see, new locations in Rapture that suggested themselves, but that didn't fit with the story of Bioshock 1. And here in Bioshock 2, we have an opportunity to bring those to life.
Yeah, I think also the space station utopia was really boring. but honestly, like Jordan and I talked about this like a while ago, like, you know, what do we do for the sequel? And without, you know, sort of any idea was out on the table at that point. And I think nobody has played Bioshock probably more than the developers who made it. And so I feel like in one respect, we are a pretty good litmus test of whether it's still an interesting place or not. And I mean, at the beginning, like, I just was so psyched to actually think about new parts of the City of Rapture and continue working in the artistic style that we developed for the first game and, you know, invent locations and stories and characters that still existed in Rapture. And if that doesn't bore us and we're the people who've played it, like, you know, for thousands upon thousands of hours, then, I think we have a pretty good perspective on you know, how interesting that location really is.
While Rapture may be a fascinating place, this is a video game we're talking about, after all, and the character you play is crucial to the success of the experience. In Bioshock 1, the player took on the role of a seemingly regular man, stranded in Rapture, but in Bioshock 2, you step into the shoes of the first Big Daddy. Big Daddies, in Bioshock 1, were probably the most feared opponent you could come upon, many wielding huge drills in one hand, and others carrying rivet guns that could take you down in moments.
One of the cool things about playing a Big Daddy is in Bioshock 1, you know, you would defeat the Big Daddies, and then clunking to the ground would be this huge guy in an antique diving suit, and he'd have this big badass drill on his hand. And so you'd be like, man, you know, that thing's better than this wrench I've got. I wish I could use that. And you couldn't. Well, in Bioshock 2, you actually begin with the drill. Furthermore, there was another type of Big Daddy called a Rosie that when you would take her out, she would drop this massive industrial rivet gun on the ground. And there it was, this super ornate thing that it looks like a playable weapon. But it's like, oh, sorry, you're just a regular dude. You can't wield that thing. Well, in Bioshock 2, of course, all the Big Daddy weapons are accessible to you. And so the rivet gun is one of the early ranged weapons that you get.
Becoming a Big Daddy sounds like an awesome experience, but as I said, they were the thing that was most feared. Ask a veteran Bioshock player how he felt the first time he faced a Big Daddy, and I promise the tale will be harrowing. All this talk of badass weapons and becoming one of the most powerful elements in Rapture makes me ask, who do you fear now? The Big Sister, Jordan says back.
The player is a prototype, which kind of puts him in this position of being smarter and faster than the average Big Daddy. The idea is that the later models were sort of simplified and more kind of brute-like, and that the player was designed to be to take a different role, essentially. And that puts you in the place where other Big Daddies are a legitimate threat. It's like if in a single-player game, you were this kind of, you know, unstoppable singular force. But if you were to face yourself, that would be a huge challenge. So the Big Daddies are still a very legitimate threat. Splicers in large groups. Splicers are the sort of degenerate drug addicts who have become addicted to this drug called Atom, and have been altering their DNA over and over again, and sort of causing them to fall apart but get more powerful at the same time. In large groups, those guys are still very much a threat to you. And then there are new splicers to come in BioShock 2 that have managed to survive all of the time between the events of the first game and the second. And those guys, because they have managed to basically in a completely closed system be the ones, the top predators, they actually are a real threat to you. And then finally, on top of all of that, there is a brand new character who is sort of born of Rapture's tragic history and who takes a place at the very top of the food chain. So in BioShock 1, you would have these sort of dynamic and very consensual boss fights against the Big Daddy characters. Well, there's a character called the Big Sister, who is watching all of your interactions with Big Daddies and Little Sisters, the sort of gatherer characters that follow the Big Daddies around and siphon Atom out of bodies. And every time that you take a Little Sister out of the ecosystem, she becomes angry because you're disrupting the status quo. For her, Rapture coming back to life and functioning as it did in her memories is very important. And so she watches you for a while, and then she comes and hunts you down. And she is kind of a literal hybrid between a Big Daddy and a Little Sister. The idea is that she is an ex-Little Sister, an important Little Sister who returned to Rapture, unable to kind of leave it behind, and put herself through the process of becoming a Big Daddy. But it only sort of half worked, and somehow her armor, you know, was kind of custom fitted around her, and she is this sort of lithe, ultra dysfunctional figure that is powerful but unstable.
Even after all this talk, I felt I had really only scratched the surface of what BioShock 2 really was. But having experienced BioShock 1, that didn't surprise me much. The twist of the game is still hailed as one of the best moments in video game history, and much of the thrill of playing through that story was the experience of uncovering the mystery. But for the player who had already been to Rapture once before and learned the sordid tale of Atlas and Andrew Ryan, would BioShock 2 still remain mysterious?
I would say definitely the setting in BioShock 1 was in fact the mystery. This time around, we're bringing you into locations that are informed by new ideas, and that in fact your entire identity is again a strong mystery with a touchstone that comes from the first game. Like I know what a Big Daddy is, but you definitely don't know what the player character is. He is a unique entity. And so our feeling is not only need the story be mysterious, it also has to be very unified with the kind of gameplay that you're dealing with. So we mentioned earlier that, you know, you've got the plasmids, and I think you asked about some of the tools involved. Well, in BioShock 2, the plasmid system has deepened quite a bit, and this sort of reflects the fact that Atom, this genetic force, this sort of stem cell-like material that has run wild in Rapture, is changing the city, and it's also affording new opportunities on the plasmid front. So the plasmids are deepening. You know, each time that you upgrade one of your sort of genetic superpowers, you get a new crazy usage rather than just more damage or last longer. And meanwhile, you're learning how Atom has sort of affected Rapture since, and how the Big Sister is involved with all of that.
Yeah, I think also the most compelling mysteries this time around are, as Jordan said, it was really environmental mystery and who am I the first time. But I think this time around, it's really the characters that you meet as you go through the game and how they're related and how they're to each other and how they are related to the city of Rapture that is going to be the really compelling mystery. And there are actually, there are a handful of characters from the first game that actually are in this one, like Tannenbaum makes an appearance and she's related to what's happening in the story very closely, and you start to learn about her and you know other characters that we can't talk about today, but that's the cool, you know, the cool mystery comes from the characters and their relationship with each other and the world.
Yeah, we heard a lot from fans of the first game that they wanted closer involvement with live non-spliced characters who were sane and could, you know, that you could have a moment of respite, really, where you're dealing with somebody who's, who seems coherent. And so in Bioshock 2, we've got a new cast of characters that you get to participate in those moments with and actually make choices about their fate, which allows you to affect the greater story in a way that we weren't able to do with the first game. You know, we had the one central choice with Little Sisters, and we've got that again. And we've actually evolved that quite a bit. But the choices related to the adult characters, the ones who are kind of more gray, are entirely new.
With that, Jordan and Hoagie left me to continue doing what they do best, building Bioshock. I had many more questions to ask them, covering just about every topic we had already touched on today. But I knew there would be plenty of time for that. They do work down the hall from me, after all, in a studio painted in brilliant green and blue, with a life-size Big Daddy and Little Sister watching over the entire team, waiting for them to complete the next epic journey through Rapture.